Chuck Chat Technorama for Monday, November 28th, 2005.
Any similarities between this podcast and actual events and or persons living or dead are purely coincidental. Names have been changed to protect the innocent, and no animals were harmed in making of this podcast.
Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
Unilateral phase detractors. Cardinal gram meters. Six hygroscopic marble veins. Conductors and fluxes. Prefamulated amulite. Malleable logarithmic casing. Swerving bearings. Panometric fan. Milford trunnions. Ambifacient lunar wane shaft. Lotus O deltoid type. Semi-boloid slots of the stator. Drawn reciprocation dingle arm. Sinusoidal deplanaration. Retroencabulator.
Hello and welcome to Technorama. This podcast has been double encrypted with ROT13. That's for all you geeks out there. I'm Chuck Tomasi, and with me as always is my wonderful co-host, Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
Hey, I'm good. I'm getting over my turkey hangover.
Turkey hangover?
Yeah.
Are you tripping on tryptophan?
Something like that.
Before we get started, I want to give a special shout out to Mark Shepard for his financial support. Currently, our only means of support for this show is through listener donations via the tip jar button on the main page of the website at www.chuckchat.com. Mark's donation covers the greater portion of our hosting costs for the month, so thank you very much, Mark.
Yeah. Thanks, Mark. Hey, everybody else, go try out the tip jar button, and it makes your screen do funny things, so give it a shot.
Go try it out. Don't make it sound like malware, income poop.
I started to say, when you click on it, money will start falling out of your screen or something like that. I don't know.
This show is a member of Friends in Tech and also techpodcast.com, the two places to go for fun, good, clean tech stuff.
Okay.
Coming up in tonight's show, what do you got for us, Craig?
I hexered my Xbox.
You hexered your Xbox.
Yes, I did. I finally got my Xbox hacked, and it is everything I thought it would be.
You've been talking about this for a week or so you finally pulled the trigger.
And guess what? I'll be talking about it for another couple weeks now.
We also have some interesting offbeat news, and we talked to the photographer from the local paper who came by a couple of weeks ago to do the whole photography thing. Yes?
We are offbeat news. We are the offbeat news.
If we're looking for offbeat news, you've come to the right place.
Yeah.
All right, stick around. We'll be right back.
Yeah, don't go anywhere.
On this day in tech history for November 28th, 2005. This is November 28th. It's the 332nd day of the year. There are 33 days remaining in 2005. It was on this date in 1520, after navigating through the South American Strait, three ships under the command of Portuguese explorer Ferdinand Magellan reached the Pacific Ocean, becoming the first Europeans to sail from the Atlantic Ocean to the Pacific. At Gresham College in 1660, 12 men, including Christopher Wren, Robert Boyle, John Wilkins, and Sir Robert Moray, decide to found what is later known as the Royal Society. The first American automobile race occurred on this date in 1895. It ran 54 miles from Chicago's Jackson Park to Evanston, Illinois. Frank DeRia wins in about 10 hours. 54 miles, 10 hours. You do the math. And in Haverhill, Massachusetts, in 1907, scrap metal dealer Louis B. Mayer opens his first movie theater. The Italian physicist Enrico Fermi passes away on this date in 1954. And on this date in 1964, NASA launches the Mariner 4 probe towards Mars. Happy birthday on this day in history to Nathaniel Bliss, the Astronomer Royal, born on this date in 1700. And also born on this date in 1950, Russell Allen Hulse, the American physicist. And that's the way it was on this day in tech history for November 28th, 2005.
You're listening to the Technorama podcast, and this is Rob from Podcast 411 reminding you to listen different.
A week or so ago, we were talking about the THX sound. We were talking about the, you know, what it stood for and where it came from. Yeah,
like that.
We were making funny noises. Well, I came across an article. I think this made it through Dig, I believe. It said, the story where the THX sound came from. I like to say that the THX sound is the most widely recognized piece of software, or excuse me, piece of computer-generated music in the world, says author Andy Maurer. This may or may not be true, but it sounds cool! We'll have a link to the... this is apparently part three of... I saw four parts of the Tiny Music Maker series on musicthing.blogspot.com. So part three is all about the THX sound and tells how he came to do the thing, and Lucas was behind it. He was actually working for... Lucas on, I think it was Jedi at the time.
Sorry to point out the obvious, but... Never mind.
Come on, Craig! Trying to do a new story here.
Part four was,
on a similar note, the story where the Apple startup chime came from. That has nothing to do with Lucas, so there.
The...
Whatever. Yeah, the startup chime. There is a program out there that'll emulate all the different startup chimes. You can hear the bing, bong, ching.
Ta-da!
Yeah. No, they didn't, there was never a ta-da. It was always a one sound thing.
No, I was thinking of crappy Windows sounds.
Ding.
Come on, man.
Ding,
hey.
Ding. Okay.
Well, I don't care whether you like Windows or not, but you got to admit that the startup sounds weren't that great.
No. On a more somber note, we heard that Pat Morita, also known as Mr. Miyagi from the Karate Kid movies, he died on Friday at age 73.
You saw him at Lambeau Field?
Yes, I did.
I'm sorry to steal your thunder.
I saw him in real life. Of course, I was up in the nosebleed section, and he was on the other end during the national anthem. But, yeah, that short little guy way out there. And then I saw him in the Jumbotron. I go, oh, yeah, it is Mr. Miyagi.
Okay.
I was like,
how did you,
4 or 5
well, you
years
saw
ago.
Him across the field.
He was, they always sing the national anthem. He wasn't singing the national anthem, if I recall. That would have been kind of weird, but.
Yeah. Well, I was kind of bummed when I heard about that today. So
he's one of those figures that you just, the friendly old grandfather type. It has nothing to do with tech, but we just thought we'd pay our respects to Pat Morita, and we wish his family all the best.
Move along, Chucky's son.
All right, get back to the funny stuff. You spotted something about Foxtrot taking another stab. Oh, this time they were at Sony DRM?
Yeah, they were making funny, making joke at about the Sony DRM. I'm not going to read a comic to you, but you ought to go read that. We'll put a link to
did
that.
Did you see the one that they had for Halloween where one of them dressed up? They just had like suits and a hat on, and one hat said MPAA and the other said RIAA.
That's right.
Those are scary.
Foxtrot is awesome. They always throw in a little bit of geek in there somewhere.
Oh, my
awesome.
Gosh.
Yes, but that was pretty good. And he was trying to convince the person that... I don't know. We'll find that one. I'll just stick that in there.
And Slashdot picked up an article on Microsoft opening their Office formats.
Yeah, it looks like they're trying to get their Office formats ratified by the EITA or one of whatever that governing body is that does like the ISO standards and whatnot, so they can show that they're trying to be more open and anybody where any software, including like OpenOffice and. Which I think we talked about this a little bit last time.
Yeah. Now, are they or are they not PHP going with that? Open document format?
No. The problem is everybody's been using Word docs and whatnot. So they're trying to open their formats not so they won't lose market share.
Okay.
People are wanting to dump some, like Massachusetts, they're wanting to dump Office because their file formats are, are proprietary, and of course it requires everybody else to have Microsoft Office or something to be able to read this file format, which, you know, makes perfect sense. Why would you want your data locked into some stupid program, whether it's Office or anything?
Well, you know, if you've got, what is it, 90% of the market share for Office productivity software, who cares? It's kind of like if you buy
it. It matters because you got to pay. That's where the problem is. You are requiring me to pay to Office to view a file, you know.
The viewing thing, yes, I can understand that. We did have a discussion on that not too long ago.
Or even use it. But the situation is that's turning around, and they're going to be opening the formats. Anybody will be able to use them. You know, I mean, really, come on. You got 90%. That should be all the more reason for you to open it up.
Do you think they'll document everything, or do you think they'll still have hidden little things like when they implemented Java and you know, their own?
Well, I think if you open up, they're going to have to do it all the way. But the thing is, if they've got something hidden in there, which they might, it'd still be easy to spot because, you know, the majority of it's going to be open, I imagine. So
I don't care.
I'm
going to have to wait and see.
I don't care if it's Office or not. That would suck. It sucks to have something you create tied to a program.
True.
So, that's my rant, man.
Oh, I got one coming up later.
Oh, no. Okay.
Chris Conroy from the do that one more time. Hello, this is Kai and Chris Conroy from the Technical Difficulties Podcast, and you're listening to Chuck Tomasi on ChuckChat.com.
Hey, did you see Make Magazine way back? Have you seen the various covers of Make Magazine?
Yeah.
See the one that was entitled R2 DIY?
Yeah, they had some the two R2 units on the front, one of them shorter than the other, than a regular R2. Yeah, it looked pretty cool.
Well, Boing Boing picked up an article that one of those C-3PO replicas, not the R2 D2s, but there was a C-3PO also on the cover standing in the background. Mm-hmm. And one of those is for sale on eBay. The starting bid was $1,700. Yep. We will have a link.
I bet it's not that now.
I'll bet it's not that now. I haven't checked it recently. But that would be pretty cool. It looked pretty good.
I'm pulling it up now. Let's see. Oh, the buy it now price is $2,100.
Oh,
really?
It's
got no bids? That's a 5-day listing. But it has this buy it now price is $2,100.
Human.
And he's got the
human articulator inside, not included?
I guess not. Does Anthony Daniels come with that? It's got one silver leg, and it's pretty cool.
One silver leg? What's the other one? Just open wires?
You know, it's calf. The calf to the foot is silver.
Okay.
It's authentic. You know, it's because he's parted, you know, together. But, Jay, you know, this is something, you know, children always have a different perspective on things.
Uh-huh.
And I remember somebody talking about how I think it was Revenge of the Sith. They got a kid's point of view on, you know, some of the things in it. Anyway, today I had one of those situations with a 9-year-old. It's a friend of our family. He was with us today, and he was talking about Star Wars. And get that, this is a whole day. I've been talking to Star Wars with kids all day for some reason. But anyway, the 9-year-old was asking me about, he said, did Anakin make C-3PO? And I said, yeah, he did. He said, he asked if Anakin made him when he was a kid. I said, yeah.
Yeah.
And he said, well, why did he make him so tall? He said he didn't want to. Well, he said, if I made one, I'd want it at eye level or shorter.
Right,
so I
you want
up.
A friend. Kind of weird now that you think about it.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, I mean, it'd be easy enough for Anakin to make an R2 unit or something eye level. So, yeah, I thought that was pretty funny. Makes perfect sense to me.
Wow, that kid might want to talk to TD0013.
I might get him to record something and send it to the Dragon page.
I think this whole thing about Anakin building the robots is a crock.
Yeah, that's right. That was pretty funny.
There is a Pong clock. This is another one of those just weird things that you see every once in a while. I was over at joystick.com. That's STIQ.com, by the way. And somebody has come up with a Pong clock. The left side wins every hour. It just plays this arbitrary game. Those pedals go up and down, and once a minute, the right side scores to tell you what time it is. So when you glance at this clock, it'll say like 13:59. Of course, in a Pong game, it looks like the score is 13:59.
Mm-hmm.
And then it resets the other side, and it becomes 14:0. And then the right side starts winning again.
Yeah, where the score
is. So you can just glance at this. But meanwhile, you know, it just keeps playing this random game. You know, doot, 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 doot.
Hey, what time is it? And get stuck looking at it. that does look pretty cool.
It's kind of weird because my daughter last weekend asked if I would pull that Pong game out from behind the TV. I still have one, and we played
it. It's still hooked up to the TV?
Yeah. Yeah. It's entertaining for all of about 10 minutes.
Hey, guess what?
What?
Don't tell anybody, but you know, I'm going to talk about my Xbox hack.
Yeah, I know. You're making me sick.
I got Pong on my Xbox now.
Sweet! Yeah. That's a good basic exercise for, you know, teaching kids hand-eye coordination, just the basics. Because, you know, I don't want to launch her into some, you know, Mario World 3D or anything if she doesn't have the basics of, if I move this thing, it'll turn that. Because maybe it's just me, but I can't handle those new controllers, Craig. There's too many buttons.
When you snatch the joystick from my hand, you have learned Linty Grasshopper.
All right, we've got another weird story. A man won an auction on eBay. He was bidding on a Mac 2FX. I don't know if you remember what those were. I think they were 6820 machines.
Mm-hmm.
Dual floppies. They were actually pretty fast, lightning fast in their day, which was
popular. I've seen a bunch of those.
Late 80s.
And, yeah, they were popular.
Yep. I had a friend who had one. We played many a game of Maelstrom on them. Although it took forever to load up Maelstrom. Now I play it on my PowerBook and it goes, boom, I can't believe how fast that status bar goes over. Anyway, back to the story. He won the bid and was doing some poking around and found out this thing belonged to Douglas Adams.
Yep.
You know, the Hitchhiker's Guide guy? I've got an article to Vintage Macworld over there. He fired it up and he was doing a little house cleaning. He goes, oh man, someone left all these old files on there. He pulled up, I think it was Claris Works. And it said, registered to Douglas Adams. He goes, yeah, right. You know how people pirate software registered under a pseudonym or something.
Yeah, we heard all.
But then he pulled up another application, and it, too, was registered to Douglas Adams. He opened up some documents, and it had this woman's name on it. I don't remember what it was called, but it was Douglas Adams' widow's name on all these documents, the name that she wrote under. And Then the light bulb went on. He goes, oh my gosh. So he did a little data recovery to get his original files back. But he's got a lot of old manuscripts and things from Douglas Adams that could be found nowhere else. I thought that would just be, you know, it's sort of like the geek's version of finding the Rembrandt in the rummage sale.
Mm-hmm.
This is finding the Douglas Adams 2FX on eBay. Woo! Although it's probably not worth as much as a Rembrandt in a rummage sale.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think this happened a few years ago, didn't it? A couple years ago? Yeah, 2003. I remember hearing about that, and when you were there, I was like, oh, that's too cool. Just imagine coming across a gem like that.
That would be neat. I would pull that hard drive and put in something else in its place just so I could still have it around somewhere.
I don't need that data here.
No, just make sure it's pristine. Back it up. All right. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I bet there's some data recovery places that were probably, you could talk them into doing it for free.
Probably. Yeah. I was at my dad's house yesterday, and he had a pamphlet. I don't know where he got this thing, but I thought it was just the coolest-looking unit. It's called the Cruisin' Cooler. Have you clicked on this?
No, I'm going to do it right now. All right,
click on the link and tell me what you think. This is a regular, like, 40-quart-size cooler, only it's got wheels. And you can get a motor, either electric or gas-powered. It's got handlebars. It's like a little three-wheel or tricycle. It's got maybe, I think, 6-inch inflatable pneumatic tires, foot pegs, and then They have all kinds of accessories. You can put racing stickers on it. You can get a high back seat for it. You sit on this cooler and ride it around like a little motorcycle.
Yeah, the body of it is actually a cooler. You know what? I think I've seen people riding these things to the NASCAR race.
I think that would be the greatest thing to have, like, at a Packers tailgate party.
Mm-hmm.
You'd get so many funny looks. You know, just drive around and go, hey, you want a cold one?
Earnhardt!
You'd probably see somebody with a big old number 3 on there, wouldn't you?
No, they made this on American Chopper last week.
The cooler?
No, I'm just kidding. Hey, speaking of NASCAR, there's Bobby Allison on one right there. That's pretty funny.
I haven't figured out how much these things are yet. I'm gonna have to look.
Yeah. Well, we'll get back.
Ready to get your geek on? You should check out Technorama.
We have a clip from Steve Holden, our buddy over at Tech News Radio.
Hey, Steve. Shout out.
He said he was a little sidetracked. I'm going to let him tell the story. This is just a short little clip from him saying, I think I found something interesting for you. He's been doing a little sleuthing for us.
Hey, Chuck and Craig, this is Steve Holden at TechNewsRadio.com, and I found something that got me sidetracked from my day-to-day immensely focused enterprise technology research, so I figured I might want to share that with the good listeners of Technorama. Have you ever played the game Splinter Cell? When I have time, it's one of my favorite PlayStation 2 games, and one of the most interesting components of the game is, other than sneaking around like a ninja, is that the hero of the game, Sam Fisher, has a cool IR thermal goggle that you need to use to read keypad combos to gain access to certain rooms without the bad guys knowing about it. So is this science fiction James Bond gameplay, you might wonder? Well, probably not. There's a site out there called... And here's the URL, and I'll send you the link in email. Also, it's http://lcamtuf.coredump.cx/tsafe/. That has some detailed analysis and pictures of some real-world experiments. So if you can watch somebody using a keypad or a combo button on a door or a safe with the right types of equipment, you should be able to get the combo. A little tidbit there for everybody. So not all of our server rooms who are protected this way might not be so safe from that rogue programmer or that pointy-haired boss with a thermal camera. Definitely something to be slightly concerned about. Maybe a different security model might be in order, like a spit-in-the-bucket DNA scanning or something similar to that. So for more information about my podcast, check out www.technewsradio.com and have a great day.
As long as it's only spitting in the bucket, I'm okay. If we have to do anything else into the bucket, count me out. That's where I start drawing the line. Craig, did I lose you? Ladies and gentlemen, I think Craig fell off the map. Yep, there's the click. I'll get him right back. So we've got Craig back.
Hey, I'm back.
The wonders of modern technology.
Yeah.
Now, didn't they use a thermal imaging thing like that on National Treasure?
Oh, man, I'm trying to remember.
Somebody pushed some buttons, and then they put on the goggles, and... No, it wasn't thermal. I'm sorry. That was, like, some chemical they put on somebody's fingertips or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then they looked at the keyboard and said, no, it's Valley Forge.
Yeah, that's right. I do remember that. No, but I looked at this. This is pretty cool. At first, I looked at it. I thought they were doing some kind of thermal imaging to see... You know how you would change the tumblers or something, but no, I see where you're actually looking at what they do or what they're pushing to get in.
Of course, if you're like me, you usually push 3 or 4 wrong keys before you push the right one. So by the time somebody comes along with a thermal camera, they're all lit up like a Christmas tree, and you haven't got a clue.
You know what? You should press your palm against the pad for just a minute, and then release it, and then hit the numbers, and then that'll bypass that problem.
Or once it's open, push some more numbers just to have fun.
Yeah. What's this? He used every number in the... Oh, well.
All right, let's get on with your Xbox.
Yes. You know, I was waiting for... I had a friend that said he was going to bring me a Splinter Cell, you know, over the weekend. Mm-hmm. So I never caught up with him, so I was like, you know, over eBay Games, they have used games, so I went in there to see what they had.
sure enough, they had Splinter Cell, which is one of the games that you can use to, speaking of Steve's clip, Splinter Cell is one of the games that you can use to actually execute this hack. And there's three other ones, I think, that allow you to do this. One of them is like one of the James Bond games and some other ones. Anyway, so I bought the game for $6.
Mm-hmm.
I bought the USB cable that allows me to hook up a USB thumb drive to where the joystick controller connects to the front of the box.
Yeah.
Got that off eBay for like $7. I downloaded a couple of game saves that you get off the internet. They're not really saved games. What they are is one's like a loader. The other one is the actual data that installs Linux and installs the new dashboard. And the new dashboard allows you to kick off programs and run stuff. So I put the thumb drive onto the Xbox, let it format it. It puts it in some kind of format that my PC doesn't recognize, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I plug it in there. The PC sees it. I can't use it because it says it's not formatted. Da, da, da. Anyway, I use a program to copy these save games on there in this particular format. Put it back on the Xbox. Copy the two save games, like I said, the loader and the Linux install, onto the Xbox. Put in Splinter Cell. Start it up. I go to load the saved games. I load the loader. Bam. It kicks off. Menu comes up. It walks you right through it. First thing you do, you back up your your Microsoft stuff. Then you install its dashboard, and you install some other stuff, and it's like, boom, boom, boom. It walked you right through it. The hardest thing was getting the data on the thumb drive. That was it. So once I did that, I was able to FTP to the Xbox, to its Ethernet port. I copied some programs I downloaded off of xbins.org. And there's a way you have to go through an IRC channel to get access to their FTP stuff. But I downloaded MAME OX. I'm sorry, MAME OX. Allows you to run MAME ROMs on the Xbox. And let me tell you, there is nothing more satisfying to me than sitting down in my living room in front of my TV and playing Pac-Man.
Now, yeah. did you follow somebody's instructions, or did you make this all up yourself?
No, did I make this up myself? Man, I just still trying to figure it out. No, I have a ton of websites that had all instructions on how to do all this. Do the soft mods where you don't need the chip to actually make it work. So I got some links to some of those on my web blog. Last August, I think it was, and I think last year I posted something about soft modding on the Xbox, and I, to this day, are still getting comments posted to it. It's like the top of my search keywords whenever I look at my stats. It's pretty amazing how many people are still looking for that. So anyway, one of them was a 10-minute guide to doing your Xbox, and it really took me about 10 minutes. The only problem was it took me about 30 to get it to figure out that there was a different format on the thumb drive, and anyway, so it took me about an hour, but really the install part took me about 10 minutes.
And you
so
like
the next
it.
Thing I'm, huh
you like it
I like it a lot. Well, the next thing I want to do is install the Xbox Media Center, and you can go to the xboxmediacenter.com, I think it is, and it is a program that you run on there. It will run or play videos in Xvid or music in any format known to man across the network. So I can have a server with my shows, movies, DVDs all up in a box up here in my office and have it wirelessly play all this stuff through the network on my TV.
Cool.
Yes.
Wirelessly. That's good.
Wirelessly. Yeah. Or wired if you want to, but, you know, wireless is cool.
Neat. Hey, I've got an update from Scott Reynolds, who sent me a quick Apple script to update all your podcasts on your schedule. This is kicked off by typically by an iCal event. You can say, run this script at such and such a time. Mm-hmm. Very simple script. We'll include it in the show notes, but basically you tell application iTunes to update all podcasts and tell. That's it. Three lines. You save it as an application, put them into your application support. Cal Scripts created this, if it wasn't there before, and you open the file from an iCal alarm, and you're done. That's really it. So if normally people would say, just upgrade it, you know, update once every 24 hours or every hour or something that's built into iTunes. But he says, this lets me update it at the times I want. If you want 11 p.m. and 3 a.m. and 5 a.m.
That's cool.
Then do it on your own schedule rather than, you know, some predetermined fixed interval.
I have a question.
Yes?
And maybe somebody out there in listener lane can help me out. My biggest complaint about iTunes and the iPod is not so much as having it update, which this is good, though, is when I put the iPod on there, like tonight, tomorrow morning, if I've downloaded some, and I pull the iPod off the thing.
They won't necessarily be synced.
They won't be there. Why the crap does it not sync?
They always have to do that right-click update to get the iPod to update. I know. No. There's got to be a similar command in Apple Script to update the iPod.
Yeah, because, you know, well, actually, you know what would be really cool? When I tell it to disconnect and it would just update.
You don't necessarily want to do it before you disconnect.
I would like to see this
same script modified, you know, a line or two, whatever it takes, modified so when I get up and take the thing off the cradle every day at 7 a.m., that at 6 a.m., it automatically does that sync that you're talking about.
Or something like that, yeah, because that's garbage. I've been in the car, and I'm like, I'm going to listen to our show from last night. It's like, holy...
Yep, it's not there. Because you forgot to right-click update.
Yeah, it's like I saw it in my list, but I didn't know do update. So I want to fix for that. But
yeah, could do the same kind of thing. I'm calling all AppleScript people. Calling all AppleScript people. We're looking for your help.
But that does stink.
Yeah, it does.
Anyway. All right, that's my second rant of the day.
Well, you're full of them tonight.
Yeah, well, the show's still young.
WordPress.com is now public. Now, some of you may know WordPress.org is the place where you go and get the download of WordPress and you install it on your system and you set up the database. And yeah, that's what we're running now is WordPress.org on ChuckChat.com. Mm-hmm. Well, WordPress.com is a way of hosting it. TypePad has had this for a while. Blogspot is another way. It's a hosted blog. You don't have to know anything about setting it up and configuring it. You just basically start using it, and you can do some customization. So WordPress.com is now public. Use WordPress without setting it up yourself, basically. The good and the bad, there's good and bad to this whole thing. It lacks Google AdSense support, which is, you know, a lot of people use that to sort of offset their hosting costs. They put some Google AdSense words in there. And from what I've heard, it also lacks theme customization. So you can...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a big one.
I don't know what themes they give you. I'd hate to see everybody with the same boring blue banner. I haven't had a chance to check into it. Or can you download themes, but there's just no theme editor component to it?
Maybe there's a list of themes that you can select.
Maybe.
You know what? I'm going to sign up for an account and just try it.
You do that.
I wonder about plugins, too.
That would be another good one. Yeah. Can you do the plugins like the iTunes plugin if you wanted to do that?
Or the spam karma, or whatever it is.
Yep.
You know, I could see them limiting plugins before I see themes.
Well, I had a 5.5-minute segment, which was the first part of a discussion with the Post Crescent photographer. But based on where we are in the showtime, I'm going to push that off till the next show.
Oh, come on, man!
No, I'm not going to play that tonight. We've still got a few things in the geek library that we've got to push through, and I don't want to run this into about 45-50-minute section. So, in the Geek Library, we've got a movie trailer for Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest. It requires the Xvid codec. We'll put a link out to that. Good trailer. Really good trailer. Looks like it's got a more serious component to it than the first movie did. So,
well, and it is just a teaser, though.
So, yeah.
So, but anyway, I looked cool from what I could see.
Actually, I downloaded it. It's on my desktop. That's what that is.
Don't you love Aaron files sitting around?
Yeah, I do. Especially when I go to clean them off and go, do I really need that? And I'll watch it later.
I found this website that had a ton of screenshots of older OSs. I said almost just about every OS, which actually it's probably pretty close, but it got screenshots from, you know, just about every.
I've got to check that out. You know how I am with the old stuff.
Yeah.
I got to check that out.
I thought that would be perfect. Like, it was funny looking at version Windows. Was it Windows version 1? Oh, man, that brought back some memories.
Yep. It looks
so DOS shell.
Bland, doesn't it?
Yes, it was. You know, version 1 through 3 all looked similar. You know, with the blocky windows and whatnot. So
we've also got a link to 500 plus colors. These are colors that web designers use. They're listed by name, by hex code, by RGB value, and also something I was not previously familiar with, Microsoft Access Number. Have you ever addressed numbers in this way? I don't do a whole lot of Windows programming, so this doesn't make any sense to me.
I don't see the reason why I wouldn't.
But if you're looking for those standard values and, you know, you got to have gray 75 instead of gray 76, you'll know exactly what numbers to plug in. So we'll provide a link to that in the Geek Library section of the show notes as well. And
Access number? I'm trying to figure out what that is.
I have no idea. It's just, it doesn't even look like it's sequential or anything. If you look at the color gradients, I don't know. It's just kind of bizarre.
Did you say MS Access or just Access?
I don't know if that's actually MS Access. It's listed as the Microsoft Access number.
Okay.
It must be some numeric code they use when you're doing screen layouts or something. Maybe one of our fine listener can tell us.
Yeah, please do. Educate me.
And of course, we can't get through the show without firing you a Geek Thoughts.
Geek Thoughts.
Failure is not an option. It comes bundled with Windows.
One of my new favorites right there. Be sure to quote that regularly at your work or place where you live.
Yes, right.
Would you like to take us out?
Yes, sir, Captain. You know, Christmas is coming.
Whatever you're drinking, double the dose.
Yes, right.
Christmas is coming. Stop by the website, click on the Check Chat or Technorama swag links, and pick up a few Christmas presents for your geek that you know.
Or love.
Or love. Or wish to stay away from and want to bribe them to do so. Anyway, you can contact us at 206-222-CHAT. That's 2428. You can email Chuck at chuck@chuckchat.com or audio comments, please send to chuckchat@gmail.com.
You got it right that time.
I always got it right. You won't let me finish it out. You're always like, eh.
You tripped over it a lot last time.
Oh. Well.
Or you can get a hold of Craig at craig@chuckchat.com. Don't forget to stop by the website, www.chuckchat.com, for all the forum swag, webcam, mail lists, links to the show notes, and much, much more.
Yes, much, much more.
It's been fun, it's been real, and this time it's been real fun.
Is that what that's been?
I had fun.
Is that what that funny feeling is?
Join us again next time on this same geek channel, same Technorama channel, same Technorama time. You know, that really makes no sense, because there is no time in podcasting, is there?
Yeah, there is. Time shifting.
Give us a binary high five and we'll go home.
1-0-1.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Bye now.
Later, y'all.